Tonight's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Despite Wisconsin's significant partisan divide, the issue of teaching reading to children is shaping up as an area of bipartisan agreement. GOP legislators have been meeting with the governor and the Department of Public Instruction to address concerns about Wisconsin's lagging student achievement. There is no final deal yet, but we are talking today with Representative Joel Kitchens, Republican Assembly Chair of the Education Committee, and Tom McCarthy from the Department of Public Instruction. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks.
So when we look at reading, how would you describe the situation in Wisconsin with student scores?
Well, our scores have been dropping for about the last 40 years, really. So, you know, we used to be a leader, and now we're below average by most measurements, I think. So it's not a good situation, and I think all of us can agree that, first off, education is the one chance we have to break the cycle of generational poverty that we see too much of in Wisconsin. And reading is by far the most important skill, you know, to allow a kid to be successful in school. So it's a very dire situation, I believe.
Are we in a reading crisis, Tom?
I don't know if I would go quite that far as saying it is a crisis, but I think it is, if you think of education as a competitive landscape, as the representative mentioned, Wisconsin has been sliding in terms of where it situates versus other states. And the marker that we have to doing that is the NAEP assessment, or the National Assessment of Educational Progress. And the representative aptly pointed out, we have been falling from being one of the leading states to being middle to lower end of the pack.
You both mentioned Wisconsin's downward trend. Let's look at some of those scores. So proficiency rates for Wisconsin's most recent state and national exams. The Forward exam, about a third, or 33.8% of Wisconsin third graders were proficient in reading in the last test. On the National Assessment of Educational Progress, that national exam, 32.6% of fourth graders were at or above proficiency. And on the NAEP, that national exam, more than a third of fourth graders were at or below basic in reading. Wisconsin also, unfortunately, has the worst in the nation achievement gap between black and white students. You mentioned that Wisconsin used to be near the top. What has changed?
Well, I think that about that time, as I mentioned 40 years ago or so, I think we got off the tracks in education in the United States in how we taught reading. And, you know, there's been a steady decline nationally since then. I think a lot of other states have realized the problem more quickly, or acted on the problem more quickly, and made some changes. And that's what we want to do now to get us, you know, back on track.
Do you agree that Wisconsin really was just kind of status quo and not making changes other states were making?
Yeah, and I think part of that picture is also investment in the types of practices that you're trying to push through at the localized level. Wisconsin at that same time was slipping nationally in comparison to its investments in public education.
In funding.
Correct. Yep. So you see a similar track when you look at where Wisconsin used to be in the top quartile of states to invest in public education. We're now below the average. So, you know, not saying that funding is the only marker of success, but it definitely helps districts prioritize how are we going to attack a critical issue like this.
Your committee hosted a joint hearing in March with the Senate Committee on Education, and a lot of the discussion there, the witnesses, were talking about the model in Mississippi, and that's a state many are looking to because between 2013 and 2019, their fourth graders increased their reading scores by 10 points in that time frame. Is Mississippi the model to follow? Is it the gold standard?
I don't know if it's the gold standard, but when you look at Mississippi, it's, you know, the poorest state in the union. It has the highest percentage of minority students. So with all the disadvantages they have, they've gone from being last in reading to being about where we are in the early grades anyway. So they've done a lot of things right. So we are looking at a lot of what they did, but there have been a number of other states that have taken this issue up. It's about half the states now, I believe. And, you know, they're seeing success as well. Nobody else had as far to go as Mississippi did, I suppose. But certainly Mississippi, we're looking at what they're doing very closely. And I think what we come up with will be a lot of similarities there.
Are there some components of Mississippi's model that you think would be essential for Wisconsin to adopt?
Yeah, the coaching aspect. So how they supported educators in their journey to change, I think, is a really positive and strong implementation lever that we're looking to replicate. I think the other thing that is interesting or different Mississippi versus Wisconsin is that Wisconsin, our white learners are doing a fantastic job. When you break them out and look at them, they're doing all right. When you add in some of our other subgroups, that's when we start to see that big slide. And you pointed out the achievement gap. So there are some things with Mississippi being a more diverse state than Wisconsin that we could pick up and learn of how are they teaching reading to populations that don't necessarily just look like the representative and I.
Some states have adopted reforms like those in Mississippi, but they're still lagging. Is there a concern about not doing enough or only picking certain parts of, say, the Mississippi model to implement?
You know, I think the general strategy is that we know that our teachers have not been taught properly how to teach reading while they were in college. So that's where the coaches come in. We can give them a course, but you need coaches to follow up on that. And I think, as Tom said, that's the most critical piece of it. We need to, you know, influence the curriculum that they use in the schools. Then the other piece will be the secondary school, the universities need to, in the future, be teaching them properly so that we don't have to continue this long term. So I think those are sort of the essential elements of that we would share with Mississippi and with most of the states, I think.
This issue is certainly not new in Wisconsin. There's been reading task force and conversations for more than a decade now in Wisconsin. Last session, I know that you introduced some reading legislation or other bills that made it to the governor's desk and ultimately were vetoed. He vetoed your bill that would have mandated reading assessments for certain students and required DPI to maintain a list of approved assessments. We're looking at his veto message here. He says, "I'm vetoing this bill in its entirety because I continue to object to overhauling Wisconsin's reading readiness system for assessment and intervention without evidence that the proposed approach is best suited to our students and without long-term sustainable funding." What has changed? That was just about a year ago that he wrote this. What's changed in that year?
Well, I think, I mean, part of what he said as far as, you know, no follow-up, that to some extent I agree with that, that was always intended to be the first step. We know that assessing isn't the answer. That's just, you know, that points out the problems, but it doesn't address them. So we intended that to be the first step. So I disagree with his veto. Just because we don't have the whole plan laid out doesn't mean you have to veto the first step. So I would sort of disagree with that part of it. As far as his thinking on it, you know, Tom probably knows better than I do. It seems that he has moved more towards realizing that we have to do something now about reading that didn't seem to be there in the past. Now, I didn't have personal conversations with him before, so I don't know exactly how he felt about it, but, you know, that's been my impression of it.
What do you think has changed in the conversation on reading in the last year?
I think just a little bit more of an open and vulnerable conversation between all of the parties to sit down and find the places where we have agreement and set up a larger construct like you see in the governor's veto message. I think that's really what is going to move the needle to centering this conversation on what our learners need instead of where the political winds are swirling on a given day. And I have to commend the representative for being willing to stick his neck out and broker that deal, because that's what has gotten us to the place we are right now, is the willingness to bring everyone together and say, look, we all know that this is an issue that we can address if we put our, you know, put our cards on the table and talk this through.
What have the conversations been like with both the governor's office and the Department of Public Instruction?
Well, they've been encouraging, because when this session began, I'm passionate about reading, but I thought, I don't want to go down this path and invest all this time and energy just to have it vetoed again. I'm not interested in writing legislation just to score political points. I want it to be reality. So, you know, I called Tom, and then I later talked with the governor about it, and I was pleasantly surprised that we seemed to have a lot more agreement than I thought we did. So, you know, that's what's really changed. So after that, I said, well, let's start talking about this. And we have had a lot of areas of agreement on where we want to go with this now.
Well, let's talk about that. What are the areas of agreement? What are some of those components that are coming to the forefront in proposed legislation?
So I think you heard the representative talk about a few of them, but the one piece that we believe is the cornerstone to making this a very successful plan is that we agree on a definition of what evidence-based reading is. You see in a lot of these other states the terminology of balanced literacy, science of reading, all these education jargon speak. And when you try to implement something like that isn't clearly articulated, it gets really challenging for a state agency. So we sat down with the representative right away and said, hey, let's pick these core components of what has been constituted as the science of reading that we know there's strong evidence for.
Moving away from this balanced literacy.
Correct.
That hasn't been working.
Correct. And actually put them into statute that gives the department a stronger position to implement its various connections to reading in a way that is meaningful and complete. So that is, I think, the biggest piece of what we've been talking about. And then the components that we've already touched on, which are the training, the coaching and training, both for how you expose people who did not get that level of learning as educators, but also how you position systems within schools to support that different change in philosophy. So that's those are the two biggies from my end, but we have also been having a very good conversation about the higher education component, how the department uses its authority to think differently about credentialing programs, and then a screener that's uniform and has the level of support from the department that educators need to put that into practice and support learners.
Sounds like a pretty comprehensive piece of legislation. Are you learning things through this process as well?
Oh, definitely. And you know, a point Tom made, I think, is worth repeating, that right now, science of reading is the buzzword, right? Everybody says they want science of reading. Doesn't matter who you talk to, they all say that that's what they're doing. But clearly, a lot of them are not. So we have to be very clear what we want taught. So that was, you know, I didn't mention it before, but that is an important part of it. And I have learned a lot. I mean, I'm not an educator, you know, but, you know, I've surrounded myself with people I think that do understand, you know, the classroom and what's going on there.
Tom, can you give us a little 101 on the differences between kind of what's happening now and where we want Wisconsin to be heading in terms of reading instruction?
Well, I think the cornerstone component that you're talking about here is where the emphasis of phonics lies, right? So we talk around these issues of like science of reading and balanced reading. It really is a conversation about phonics and where you're positioning phonics and how you're using phonics and building around it. I think that's probably the most understandable component for people. And then as you get deeper into this, you start to learn some of the other components of what it means to surround phonics as a center point of instruction for young learners.
Phonics meaning the sounding out of
Correct.
Words.
Yep.
And that's kind of where we want to get back to as a core.
It's sounding out of specifically letters and like chunks of letters and phrases that are the ideas of and the foundational components of reading. And how you expose learners to that instead of having them guess or having them wander through text and look at pictures. Making sure that they have that level is critical to unlocking the next levels of reading. And as you sort of build that, one of the things that the representative and multiple parties are talking about is we're focusing a lot on early reading because that's where we need to start and stabilize the systems, but it can't be the end of the conversation around reading because what we know about states like Mississippi is that they bolstered their early grade NAEP scores, but Wisconsin still bests them in eighth grade reading scores. And so there is something that we're doing to sustain that is a little bit different and we don't want to lose, but we'd also like to improve. I mean, it would be great if we came back in 5-6 years and said, hey, Wisconsin is now top 5 in the nation in fourth grade and eighth grade.
What do you see as the main sticking points? Like, where are you going to maybe get hung up in terms of hammering out the final details?
Yeah, you know, I think, again, I've been pleasantly surprised by how the things that we did agree on. I think that one of the important parts is going to be we're going to put a committee together to determine the curriculum that is going to be recommended to the schools, and also the screener, I suppose. But so who we put on that, the makeup of that committee is going to be a really important part of it. So there are certain groups that, frankly, we don't want on there that they have given lip service to we're moving to science of reading, but I don't believe they really are. So, you know, that's an area I think we'll be okay with it. We're putting it, at least in the first draft, we're going to reach, we're going to, you know, work together on coming up with who those members are going to be. And that's one of the really major parts that potentially could be a problem. But I feel pretty, I'm optimistic about it.
How far are you at in the process? When do you think we'll see a draft out as a draft bill?
Well, we have a draft that I'm hopeful will come in today. And then, I'm going to show it to some people, have them rip it apart, show it to Tom. That'll be a first draft. You know, we're getting there, but, I've got to get my caucus on board because most of them don't understand this whole thing, and there's a lot of distrust, of DPI. And so we need to get them comfortable with the idea that, this really is what we want,
What about funding? How big of an investment do you think that your Republican colleagues will be willing to make? Some states maybe haven't done enough. Other states are proposing more than even what the governor has put in his budget. Do you have a number in mind? Have you been told there's a number that you shouldn't go beyond?
The number that we came up with, and Tom was involved in these conversations too, was about $15 million. To start with, when I've run it past you know, the JFC members that I talked to and all, nobody thought that was outrageous. So I think, you know, in the scheme of things, that's not a huge investment to me, you know, when you look at what we spend overall in education.
Is $15 million enough? I think Ohio's governor, $81 million. Mississippi has spending more per student than what's been proposed in Wisconsin. Is $15 million enough?
I think we need to start someplace. And one of the things that we've heard from our education community is we're facing a shortage of educators right now. I would even broaden it out to say people who are willing to work in schools. We're facing a shortage. So what we know is that we don't want to pull at a thread that unravels the actual need in the classroom. So when the representative is speaking $15 million, I think we're trying to be smart about what a phase-in approach looks like so that we don't drop a bunch of money into a dire need and then have it pull at apart something else that creates another gigantic hole. So the other thing that I think we've been pretty clear about is that the reading component of this cannot supplant a conversation about much-needed revenue in our schools. Beyond reading, correct. Otherwise, this becomes the shiny object that districts are forced to chase, and when the money goes away or things change, the results slide. So it has to be partnered with some sort of reliable revenue growth going forward to replace the one-time federal stimulus dollars that schools are largely operating on right now.
So would $15 million cover these coaches? Would it also support schools to purchase new curriculum and make other changes in their districts?
Yeah, it would supply the coaches, and I mean, we can get into that if you want, how they would be dispersed, but it would provide the coaches. It would, you know, we hope that by buying as a state the curriculum, and we'll have our list of recommended curricula that schools can purchase, that we'll get a better deal on it. And also there is some money to supplement them to allow, you know, make it more affordable for them to do that. So,
well, let's talk about that's the scale of this. Will this be a statewide investment that supports urban and rural suburban schools, or is there a need to focus in particular areas?
Well, the plan is that we will very much be like Mississippi, where initially there will be 52 coaches. Half of those will be assigned to specific low-performing schools around the state. The other 26 will be, they'll work through the different CESAs around the state, and they'll go in, they'll go out to different schools, you know, that apply for the help. And then there will also be one coach in charge at each CESA that, you know, will oversee it, and perhaps they'll do some work in the schools as well. So, you know, we're focusing on the high need schools, but we don't want anybody to be left out, because I think most schools in Wisconsin could probably do a better job than they are.
What about Milwaukee Public Schools? Clearly our highest need school district. I think more than half of fourth or eighth graders were below basic in reading in the 2022 assessments. Shouldn't there be a significant focus there? What does DPI say about MPS?
Yeah, and as you heard the representative say, that targeting of half of these coaches to greatest need is a reflection of that conversation. And credit where credit's due, it was our Republican colleagues who actually said pretty openly, we need to move the needle on these large urban districts. I think they, and I'm not trying to speak for you here, Representative, but they all moved together as a group of five large superintendents and districts before the pandemic to agree that reading was an important cornerstone topic, and started to bite off the idea of what it felt like to do science of literacy, and were disrupted by COVID. So I do not think you're going to find a group of superintendents, boards, communities that are shying away from this. In fact, they're leaning in, but they do need that extra level of support because, as my educator friends like to say, you need to feel safe and invested in before you can start teaching topics. So there are other issues in these large urban districts that also need to be treated and taken care of, and that they need the state support to be able to pull off.
Do you expect any pushback in the caucus if a lot of resources go to, for instance, Milwaukee Public Schools?
Well, we're not going to send all, you know, we're going to deliberately not send all of those 26 to one area. You know, we are going to disperse them somewhat around the state. But Milwaukee, certainly, they have the greatest need. So, you know, there will be significant emphasis on them. And as Tom said, I met with the superintendent in Milwaukee, and they're very interested in doing this, I think. You know, they've already, as he said, they already had decided they want to move towards the science of reading. Now, defining what exactly that means and all that. And they have significant challenges with teacher retention, teacher hiring that other districts don't have. So it is a challenge there. But, you know, I think that my caucus for a long time has wanted to do something about Milwaukee Public Schools. What that is, we've been all over the place on that. But I think everyone recognizes we you know, as a state, Milwaukee has to do better. We have to do better with those students.
So what about private schools? There's a lot of students in Milwaukee that attend private schools. Would some of these resources be available to them?
Yeah, I think they will be. You know, they can apply for coaching as well.
Okay, that's part of the deal. I'm sure people will be very happy about that. DPI, Wisconsin, a local control state. DPI really has generally been in the area of guidance, not telling districts what they have to do, but making recommendations. So in a deal like this, what sort of accountability will there be? How can DPI ensure the districts would be implementing with fidelity?
Yeah, I think what we have looked to here is, one, that statutory definition of evidence-based reading that we talked to, is if that is enshrined in statute, that does give us some different policy drivers in the conversation because it aligns how the department intervenes in different practices. And there are, you know, both state and federal triggers to intervention that we could look at and look at reading as an evidence-based strategy to turning districts around. I think the second piece that the representative has laid out here is that we're willing to fund this. And what we have seen in the past as a local control state is that if you incentivize, you know, you're not always just using the stick, you're also using the carrot a little bit here, you get a community that is willing to come around. And I don't think you will find many educators in the state of Wisconsin that are unfamiliar with this conversation. And in fact, coming out of our Joint Finance Motion 57 that was developed by conservatives in the Joint Finance Committee, there was a level of training that was provided to teachers across the state, probably not enough to get everyone, but an opening salvo to this. And what we have seen is a robust interest in that training. So, you know, we're not a group of individuals who are new to this conversation. So I don't think you're going to meet that broad resistance. So with the right incentives in place, I think this should be a pretty easy go.
Do you see penalties and incentives as part of the bill, or would that be left up to DPI?
Well, I think a lot of that will be spelled out, as, you know, the incentives for taking this on. I think that'll be in the bill. You know, to piggyback on what he said a little bit, I've really been making an effort through all of this to not place blame on the past. You know, the teachers in particular, they were, you know, in my mind, trained improperly. So I don't want to blame them for how they're teaching. So I really made an effort that way. And it has been a challenge sometimes in our caucus because there are people that want to, you know, beat up DPI or the education community and say, how come you haven't fixed this before? I'm trying to stay away from that. It's a fine line here to get it through my caucus and satisfy them, but also not turn them off, because we know that if we don't have buy-in from the education community, it's not going to work.
Do we have a true sense of the percentage of districts in the state that are using that balanced literacy approach versus science of reading approach? Do we have an accurate picture?
You know, up-to-date accurate, I don't think so. So there, you spoke about local control. This is not the department's first brush with trying to do science of reading-based interventions and strategies. So the state superintendent, when she first took office, Dr. Underley, called for a reading council to look at early reading. And we've put together some modules to train. Before she took office, we were involved in what was called an instructional materials review practice with our other state education agencies. And so we did take a look at materials on a voluntary basis that were being used by districts and graded them using a nationally known grading system. So I think we have an idea of the magnitude.
It was 79% were not.
Correct.
At that time,
exactly.
Using the science of reading.
Yep. So, yes. I mean,
a lot of work to do.
Yep.
Another issue that came up in the March hearing, and you talked about it a little bit, is how we train teachers. One of your witnesses said in the hearing there's enormous resistance on the part of schools of education to kind of change the way they train teachers. What is the way to make a shift there?
Yeah, there are a couple of things. You know, right now we don't have any sort of punishments written into the legislation for those schools. But I think for one thing, when we have a list of curriculum that the teachers will be using when they graduate, it's kind of incumbent on those schools to teach to that, you know, and there's also right now there's an offer for the literacy landscape evaluation where the federal government will actually pay them up to $100,000 to implement it. They come in, it works for DPI, I guess, but the federal government provides the funding. But they'll come in, they'll evaluate their program. It's all anonymous and give them a report back. The schools have sort of been reluctant to do that even, but we're having conversations with some of the universities right now, and that's going to continue to get them on board with this. Um, I th- I surely think they see the writing on the wall too, that you know they have to, they're going to have to make this change. And the FORT exam, which the teachers take when they come out of school to show that they know how to teach reading, our results have not been good. So you know, that's an incentive for them too. If their graduates are doing more poorly than the other schools, they certainly, that should incentivize them to do better. They haven't so far, but so far I think in the legislation we have, there's not going to be that stick saying you have to do this. We're going to try these other things, and hopefully that gets them on board.
You mentioned the teacher shortage before. Where will we find the reading specialists, the coaches? Where are those people going to come from?
I think the most likely place they will come from is classrooms. I mean, I think when you incentivize this training and you make it very clear that this is a policy issue the state cares about, that is the most likely place they come from, which then, to the point that I was making about that careful thread, it pulls them out of direct instruction in the classroom, which is a very huge need that we have. So figuring out how to stabilize this system is a critical issue. I mean, they kind of hang together very closely. If we're not bringing and retaining educators, specifically retention, we produced a report recently that showed that in educators who are in their first 5 years of service, we're only retaining about 40% of them. That needs to change. I mean, we have to put our heads together and think about what are we doing to keep people in the classrooms. And again, not to continue to harp on that reliable revenue source, but if we're not compensating them at the level of their peers who also are advanced degree holders, why are they staying? I mean, they're taking a look at the fact that their skills are marketable and they're leaving.
Retraining teachers will clearly put additional stress on an already stressed profession. Will there be potential bonuses or other stipends as part of the legislation for teachers?
I don't know, but that I can't answer that, I guess. And that some of that may be up to the individual schools, I guess. You know, as he said with the coaches, though, we know we're not going to be able to hire that many coaches immediately. There's such a shortage already that's why this is going to be phased in over a couple of years. But and Mississippi did the same thing. There's no way to find that many coaches right away. But certainly the teacher shortage makes this problem a lot worse. And, you know, for those districts where they don't have quite as much problem with that, it's a lot easier for them. Milwaukee has the greatest problems with that. So
what should parents know about what might be changing? And is there a way for them to know what their districts are teaching?
That's a really phenomenal question. I think continuing to pay attention to the offerings of their local district is always, always the number one strategy, and keeping a great line of communication with their classroom educator. I think one of the things that you will likely see in the screening bill is parental notification requirements or caregiver notification requirements to say, hey, this is the screener, this is what it means, here are the ways in which your educator or your classroom is going to be attacking this issue and working with your young person. So here, you know, the next level, that like sort of superior engagement would be, here are the kinds of things that you can do in practice at home. And I think that is what we see in places that have really great success in issues like reading or another localized improvement plan. You are engaging the holistic community, which is caregivers. You're using libraries as resources where they can go find materials that relate and translate directly to what's learning in the classroom. And thinking about that adult practice, those caregivers who are a critical component of helping their young people get to the next level, treating them as if they're part of that system and bringing them along is how we make real meaningful change here.
What do you say will happen next here? Is your bill going to align with the budget? Is it all going to magically come together with the budget?
One thing, if I could add just onto what he said real quickly before that, is the story I've heard from more parents than I can count is that they went to the school, they said, I don't think my kid's teaching or reading as well as they should in first or second grade, and the teacher says, well, just read to them more at home and it'll all be fine. Then they get to fourth grade and they take the test and they can't read. So the screening hopefully, you know, will foster that, you know, that cooperation between the parents and the schools and all that. So I just did want to point that out. As far as where we go from here, the plan is that we will have a bill separately, and then the funding will be in the budget. So hopefully within the next week or two, we'll be ready to put a bill out there. And then, again, hopefully the funding will be in the budget.
What are your hopes for this legislation, speaking on behalf of DPI?
Mm-hmm. Our hopes are that we are given the right tools and the right runway to implement this so that we make some meaningful change for learners. That's what we are centered on always, is supporting those kids in classrooms.
All right. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you to our viewers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civic broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.